A very warm welcome to all of you joining us for this episode 122 of the Sound of Football podcast. My name is Chris Oakley. Very pleased to welcome you all on board for this particular edition. And of course, the show wouldn't be the same without Terry DeFellin and Graham Sibley. So hello to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
There is always that pregnant pause, isn't there?
Yes. What do you do with that?
When he says hello to both, and then we go hello, and then I don't know. It's as if one of us is waiting to go first.
I know. Yeah, we should really look at each other or something like that. Or just give each other a sign.
I can't stand to look at you. I've known you for so many years.
Yeah, sharing a sofa with you is bad enough.
I thought you were trying to give the illusion that we were doing this by satellite, and there was one of those kind of delays.
Because well, the worst thing is because we record it separately, we could always get rid of that gap anyway. So
yeah I never do.
you're keeping it in.
It's at 2 seconds of every show where the listeners think, have they actually heard him? So anyway, there we are. Anyway,
we stretched that two seconds out to 1 minute. It's brilliant. Yeah, we're not short of content this week, are we?
No, indeed. As ever, we are looking at the salient topics of the day as far as the football world is concerned. But this week, we are looking up, not down. We are actually looking ahead. We've done predictions and things in the past, but I think this week we're really going some because we're going to be looking 5 years into the future. Why are we doing that? Well, basically because, I should start the show with a bit of an announcement. Okay, now probably a lot of you already know this, but for those who don't, this is going to be my last regular, this is my last appearance on a regular edition of The Sound of Football. Many of you will know I'm heading off to go and live in New Zealand in September. And so we've got one more show actually is coming up on Friday, which is one of our pubcasts, details of which later on. But this is my last one. So we thought, well, instead of kind of crying into a beer and being desperately depressed and sentimental, let's look up, not down. So we thought, what's football going to be like in 5 years' time? At the start of the 2017-2018 season, we're going to try and predict maybe where our own clubs are, where the England team's going to be, where international football is going to be at, who the big teams are going to be, maybe even things like the governance of the game and all sorts of stuff. We have much to cram in, gents. So let's consider this like an audio time capsule that we're going to bury. I suggest that our listeners don't listen to this for 5 years.
It's a great idea.
I think that's the only way that this can really, honestly, look like come off properly. Really, I think if everyone just sees, I won't listen to this. I'll keep it on my iPod.
Mm. Yeah,
I'll just make sure that when I upgrade, because you'll probably upgrade at least twice in that time.
Remember, they won't know what an iPod is when they're listening to this.
By the time they listen to this,
that's true.
No.
We're recording this on a thing that used to be known as a laptop.
Dear.
They were all the rage once.
It sounds old-fashioned even
actually,
now.
Actually, they were going out of fashion in 2012.
But anyway, yes. So I'm going to actually just very quickly let's do each of our clubs that we support respectively. I'm going to start with you, Graham. Arsenal, of course. I mean,
still goalless.
Still hopeless, definitely.
Very good, excellent. Now coming on to you, Terry. I mean, it's not inconceivable to think that Arsenal will still be one of the top four teams in England in 5 years' time, will they not, Graham? Or to put it another way, what's going to happen to knock them off their perch so that they're not in that elite category?
I think it's always been the same for Arsenal. It really depends on what other teams do. If other teams rise up and become better than them, then Arsenal slip down, rather than Arsenal becoming better or worse. I can't see anything really changing that drastically over the next 5 years. It will really depend on what happens in the boardroom and whether this whole rumbling of Usmanov and Kroenke is still going on.
Yeah.
And I think if that sorts itself out, then maybe something will be an improvement in Arsenal's fortunes. Maybe they'll even win something. I can't see them winning a title in the next 5 years, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And Europe, maybe, if Chelsea can win it,
that they had
last year, then anyone can.
But still holding their own.
Yeah, I think so. But it really does depend on this border of battle, which has been rumbling on now for at least 5 years now, anyway. So,
and indeed, how many other multi-billionaires take over other clubs? As you kind of
I'm not too sure about how that's going to work out. I mean, looking into the future, and I suppose this is something we're going to look at throughout this pod, is the impact of financial fair play, because that's going to start happening very, very soon, and within, well, 5 years' time, either it'll have been scrapped, or it will have changed the way that clubs are run.
Yes.
And it will be interesting to see who, if anyone, is going to be the first big casualty of financial fair play. I thought this year we were seeing a reining in, especially with Man City not spending big in the transfer window. But of course, Chelsea have spent, I think, 80 million this summer.
That sounds feasible.
So they're obviously like thinking, well, yeah up yours, financial fair
play. Do your worst.
We're just spending our money, so there, no. And you know, it's whether or not that these clubs will continue doing it like that, and what the outcome of it will be.
Going back to Arsenal, I mean, one possible outcome is that David Dean and his cronies could take over the club again with Usmanov, I suppose. And
well,
I mean, who knows? Maybe Piers Morgan will be the new chairman.
That'd be fun, wouldn't it? Yeah,
I suppose. The story with Arsenal is that they're on a sound financial footing, aren't they? That's always the thing that underlines it. I suppose if they then did start to spend, say if they got a manager in to spend money, then you know the situation could change. If they started to sort of like, you know, take a few chances and spend some more money, they could win the title. If you know, you look at their infrastructure, the size of the club, the starting point that they're at, I mean, they're all pretty much automatic for top four club. The journey for them to make to win the championship would take less than 5 years if they decided to take a few risks financially.
Yeah, I think it's just a question of how much risk they're willing to take. If Usmanov seems to bring himself across, is going to just go and splash the cash around willy nilly when he comes in and do an Abramovich, then maybe we'll see Arsenal being the first victim of financial fair play.
Could be. I mean, I think to remember about, I don't know the ins and outs of financial fair play, but the things I think to remember about it is it's really to stop clubs from spending money they don't have. The clubs that we've been talking about, generally speaking, are good for it.
Yeah,
they may not necessarily have it at the time, but they are good for it.
But it's technically all the money that Abramovich spends is a loan,
sure,
which he basically writes off,
sure. But I mean, I would suggest that's probably good enough for UEFA. What they're trying to avoid is clubs like Mallorca or Portsmouth, or even Malaga, to be frank, who are out there playing as we speak. And they've had the rug pulled from under them, and they're really playing this game for the short-term future of the club at the level that they're at. I think that's really what the financial fair play thing is at. I think you may see less non-serious people turning up at football matches, to football clubs rather, to take over football clubs, people with genuine commitment. Whatever I think you might say about Usmanov, he's been around long enough to suggest that he has a commitment to the club, although what his agenda is, we don't know.
Well, exactly.
So that's one possible outcome.
Yes.
It depends on whether or not that's what you want. I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? I think there are some Arsenal purists who love the idea of Wenger farming this fantastic squad of a mixture of young players and, you know, bargain, really shrewd imports coming in and taking the title, sort of a la Borussia Dortmund in the Bundesliga.
Well, it's always been his way.
Yeah.
He hasn't done it any other way.
And there's a huge amount of satisfaction to be drawn from doing it that way. So we didn't open the checkbook. We shrewdly put together this squad from under your noses and look at where we are now. That could happen too. So I think there's always grounds for optimism for Arsenal.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I think we should turn our attention to your club then next, Terry, Crystal Palace. a club that's well and truly earned its reputation for being a hotbed of great talent. It's perhaps also fair to say that they've struggled to hang on to it in recent years, but is it going to be ever that way so in the future, do you think, Terry? Or is it, can there ever be any possible way that they can break out of that terrible cycle?
Well, I think Palace's best option is to try and get that stadium move. As much as I like the old ground, the stadium move would be great because obviously that increases the infrastructure of the club and the foundations and increases money, more income. I would like to think that, you know, the Palace is strong enough, has a strong enough youth system to be able to get a sort of grade A licence or whatever they choose to call it when the elite player performance programme is introduced, so that they would then be able to benefit from the youth, you know, the best from the youth players that they do produce. They do produce a good number. I mean, I think in the short term there are some concerns to be addressed. I mean, as we speak in the past, listeners, Palace are bottom of the table, and I think a 3-1 down in the Capital One Cup.
Of course, by the time you listen to this in 5 years' time, when you actually get round to actually,
it'll be
finally
called the Sound of Football Cup.
I wasn't actually going to say that, but
it's got a good ring to it, though.
It has got a good ring to it. Mm. I think it could happen. I think that you know, if those things don't happen and Palace just sort of like stay where they are and they can't move, then it's very difficult to see them being anything other than perhaps, you know, if they're lucky, what they are now, which is a lower mid-table Championship club. And to be blunt, with the way that you look around at the Championship clubs now and the way that they have grown, you can only really see Crystal Palace going down. Because, you know, it's a rickety old stadium, and at some point it's going to be condemned. I mean, it's astonishing to an extent that that main stand still gets a safety certificate year in, year out. That can't last forever. It's got no infrastructure. The broadcasters hate the place. They can't set up these days for a live game. Well, they can, but it's really, really hard. And, you know, I mean, there's no room for growth. And while other clubs are growing, Palace will stand still and inevitably will go back. And worth bearing in mind, I've been in administration twice in 10 seasons. You know, so there's a lot that can go wrong. There's a lot to be pessimistic about, but there is a lot to be optimistic about if the stadium move can happen. Maybe the move to Crystal Palace is probably a bit of a pipe dream, the actual Crystal Palace sports stadium, for a reason I won't bore you with, but that is a difficult area to develop, notoriously difficult area to develop. So they'll have to move somewhere else, and where that somewhere else could be, I don't know. I mean, the way that property prices are in Croydon these days, they could probably get away with flattening the centre of Croydon, just building a stadium there.
made a good start on it last year.
Well, yeah, indeed.
A work in progress, that one, I think.
But then the Olympics came along and brightened everyone's mood. But still, never mind. There's always next summer.
Damn you.
But yeah, so anyway, I don't want to talk about Palace anymore because it's really depressing. What about West Ham United then, Chris? You must have...
How many times are they going to go down and come back up?
Well, I was just going to say...
Which stadium will be there? Will they be in? That's what we want to hear. What stadium will they be playing in?
I'd like to think it'll be the Olympic Stadium. I wouldn't have any complaints having been there once now for the athletics during the Olympics. Well, very nice.
Interesting. When we're talking about, which will be in 2017, will be immediately after the World Championships.
Of course, yes.
So then there may be the whole thing. A conversation will start up again about converting it to a football stadium.
Good point. Good point. Because we'd have had that, and it might well be that there'll be more of an appetite for that now. Now, when I say now, I mean in 2017.
Post London 2012.
That's when most people live.
Because all the people listening are in there. Yeah, indeed. And you're all looking terribly well, given that you're all much older.
Slightly jowly, but. But I mean, I think.
That's impressive.
Silence, you fool. But I mean, I'm looking remarkably svelte for 49. Yeah. The transfusions worked. Sorry.
And thank you for not mentioning my wig.
you've dropped it, by the way.
I've dropped plenty of things.
We should start talking about football again.
Yes, can I just...
I might take some of that out.
All right,
West Ham,
yes.
How many times are they going to be in the Championship between now and 2017?
Well, I would say, generally speaking, that West Ham tend to get relegated about once every 5 years. So on that basis, we'll probably be... we probably would have just got relegated come the 2017-18 season. But as things are, it's, I mean, I think this season, 2012-13, listeners, is going to be a critical one for West Ham. They've really got to hang in there and stay up this season. I know it's kind of oft been said about different teams on their first season back up in the Premier League and all of that. But if they can get a foothold this season, then it's conceivable that, you know, they might be able to kind of build on that. And I'm not sure. I don't think Sam Allardyce is going to be the manager in 5 years' time, but he's doing a commendable enough job under the circumstances. You know, 2 games into this season, it's still, you know, nothing's very certain, of course. But no, he might be good for at least another season, maybe, as long as it doesn't all go completely up the creek. But yeah, I think we'll still be trailing in the wake of all the big clubs in the country, you know, the Man Uniteds and Chelseas and whatever this world. So it's going to take an awful long time before we get to that kind of standard. So it's probably going to be business as usual, really. The threat of relegation, the occasional decent cup run, the occasional foray into the second tier. I can't be any more kind of optimistic than that. But yeah, Safer kind of recites in the first three verses of I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles. I don't think anybody wants to hear that.
Very insightful there. Yes.
Yeah, I think so, yes.
None of us do want to hear that.
That's what I thought. But I suppose the 2017-2018 season is going to be the season that is the immediate run-up to the 2018 World Cup. So are there any countries you reckon that might... kind of, have I already asked this on a previous... You know when you get that deja vu? Maybe I've already asked this on a previous podcast.
Yeah, it's 5 years ago. They won't remember.
They'll have forgotten. Of course, yes. So is there anyone that's likely to break on the scene then? I mean, as far as the World Cup's concerned, can we see England, for instance, being a genuine threat by that stage?
I thought Belgium were meant to be the next big thing, aren't they?
In Europe, Belgium are supposed to be the next big thing, but I don't actually think that that's going to happen.
Ah, right.
I think that the Belgium...
It's just they've got a load of Premiership players there.
I think that the problem with the Belgian players is that Belgian football is too weak, and so that the players who come from Belgian football have to put all their energy in getting out of Belgian football in order to play for a club side where they can earn lots of money and win lots of really cool stuff, which I don't think is going to leave much room or commitment, sadly, for them to play for their national team. And I think that as a consequence, they will never be able to play with the kind of intensity that you need. Maybe even... I wouldn't mind betting that Belgium never qualify for a major tournament, despite that crop of players.
Yeah, I must admit, if your backbone of your side is based in England, yeah, international success is not what you're looking for.
Well, I mean, I'm sure there will be this probably desperately absurd argument in 2017 about how Eden Hazard is not one of the great players of the world because he's never played in a World Cup / European Championship because he's from Belgium. In a kind of along the lines of Messi's not one of the greatest in the world because Argentina will never win a World Cup under him or something like that, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah,
that's
the narrative. And yet he'll win in Brazil.
Tedious narrative. And yet, yes, as we all know, they won in Brazil.
They did, yeah.
And everyone looked
completely
finished.
And won at the counter as well. Yeah. They looked brilliant as well.
They were brilliant. And Messi, and I can't believe Messi was suspended for the final.
Yeah, well, I can't believe Riquelme played.
Yeah, indeed, yes. Yeah, well, let's not talk about Riquelme's enhancements, shall we? Yes, the enhancement, the changes in rules and the enhancements, you know, leading up to the Brazil World Cup, listeners, was really quite extraordinary, wasn't it?
It's the prosthetics that was the real leap ahead, in my view.
Could have had, they poked our eyes out with literally. I have an eye patch.
I have a robot arm.
Well, it is the future. And what is the future without eye patches and robot arms?
Well, I have a jetpack.
You swine. That's because you live in New Zealand and they're legal.
Isn't everything. Last few games I've seen of Belgium here in 2012, they have looked incredibly disjointed and as though nobody really knows who anybody else is in the team. So, yeah, that's not looking too good. So maybe not Belgium. I wonder if actually France are going down that road to some extent as well. I mean, the number of French players now coming into the Premier League, and I can't believe I'm saying this after all this time, and the number of French players that have appeared in the top flight in England, and yet still they're coming in their droves. I mean, players being snapped up, not even necessarily decent French clubs, but some of the bottom dwellers, if you will.
The
Ajaxios
of this world.
The Ajaxios. What is this disgusting talk? The thing to remember, of course, about France is that they're hosting the, or they will have hosted the, the 2016 European Championship. They put pretty much the kitchen sink into 1998 in making sure that they got as far as they could, and as it happens, they managed to win.
84. If I can just correct you on that.
1998 World Cup.
Oh, 1990. Oh, right.
The last time they hosted a major international tournament was 1998 World Cup. Yes.
My apologies. Yes. Sorry. Yes.
And they won it.
Yes.
And so, you know, I think that France will probably be in a good place in 2017 because I think that they will. They would have done. There's a chance that they'll have done very well for the 2016 European Championship.
Hmm.
I think Japan are a coming force in world football. Asian
that.
Champions. Okay,
that's and they'll just have won the Confederation Cup, won't they?
They'll have probably won the Confederations Cup
in Russia.
For those who don't follow the Japanese game too closely, I mean, Shinji Kagawa is the tip of the iceberg. And this will become apparent over the next 5 years, that they've got a wonderment of talented players, and they started their league pretty much from scratch with a specific agenda and plan on what to do, and it seems to be paying off so far. And although I don't think they'll win the World Cup in 2018, I think there's a very good chance that they will win the World Cup in Qatar in 2022. So I think that they will be very strong indeed.
Yeah.
Very strong indeed. And they've got plenty of experience in playing in South America because they often accept invites to play in the Copa America.
They do virtually every time.
Yeah. Whenever they're invited, they will always go over. So they will have played well in Brazil, and their development will continue. And I think Japan are rising, if you'll forgive the pun.
Indeed. And maybe...
They are a rising pun.
Zing.
The man truly is on fire tonight.
They're on the floor. They're not getting up from now.
A one, nah. A two. What about, I mean, elsewhere in that area? I mean, South Korea, do you have as much belief that they might be, I mean, just latching onto kind
they're,
of...
They're a, decent enough, they're a decent enough side. And having watched their Olympic team in the recent tournament, they certainly are... quite a formidable opposition, but of course Mexico, and playing really good football as well.
Maybe Mexicans need to have a bigger spread of players overseas. The Mexican league is really strong, and really, really, really lucrative. So players don't very rarely leave. You've only just started seeing Mexicans come over to Europe fairly recently.
Hernandez is probably the only really spring to mind.
In order to get that breadth of experience against different kinds of opposition, they may well need to go out if they want to win. But
because you do find some countries are very, very good at developing international teams with exclusively home-based players.
Like Germany. To an extent. Not exclusively, but...
No, not exclusively, but largely.
Yeah. Yeah.
And usually the ones who play outside are already very, very...
they were already good when
international
they...
anyway.
Sure, yeah.
But, yeah, it is that balance, because there are other equally successful sides that have no home-based players. So it's... It really is a question of what would work best for Mexico.
Whatever works best for, and it may well be that that'll work for them, and that they will do well. Or it may well be that they do need to perhaps broaden their horizons a bit. Nevertheless, but I mean, they're fantastic. That Olympic team was fantastic and deserved winners. We haven't mentioned the fact that perhaps Germany or Italy will be challenging here. I mean, what do we think about that?
World, yes. We're actually meant to know who won the 2016 World Cup.
2014 World Cup.
2014 World Cup.
You're talking about the secret World Cup that no one else knows about.
Shh. No. See, look, this is what actually happens. It actually gets held in 2016. It has to be put off for 2 years. Because
they won't know that.
Brazil's just
it wasn't ready. They weren't ready. All those media scare stories that you get before every World Cup about a country
this
not being ready
actually
happened. And Brazil wasn't ready. They woke up on the eve of the World Cup.
Would have been ready.
I know. They woke up on the eve of the World Cup and went, oh shit, we're not ready.
No, but we always
no stadiums.
So yeah, that was a bit awkward.
Yeah,
it was a bit awkward.
I'm just wondering, actually, whether in 2017 we'll start to see the first glimmerings of optimism from West Asia, places like India and places like, and you know, your Uzbekistan's and Tajikistan's and places like that, because they're long overdue breaking through, and maybe it will be a long time yet. But I just wonder if that's. We might see a stirring there somewhere.
India is a comatose giant of football.
Yeah, I think
there's no interest whatsoever in the game.
No, exactly. But there is a hell of a lot of money there,
and a lot of people.
People, so, a lot of money, people and a lot of people. Money. And that's always a market that people who like to sell football can think: how on earth can we tap into
that? We could get stop watching cricket and watch football.
You might see them trying desperately to try and break that market.
We did a podcast on the subject of that Indian Premier League that never happened.
Never happened.
We never got the call from them to be their official media partner. By the way.
Yeah, that's where it went tits up.
I think that was a key factor in why it never happened.
They got Robbie Fowler in and they didn't get us in. That's
I forgot about that. They got Robbie Fowler in.
That's where they went wrong.
Robbie Fowler and what's his name? Was it Gabriel Batistuta as well?
Probably.
Yeah. They were the same people who came up with that Wembley FC idea for Budweiser.
Oh, no.
Do you remember that, listeners? Yes, that was a shambles, wasn't it?
Yeah, but they went on to win it, didn't they?
Yeah. Although, I do miss the FA Cup. I think it's very sad that it died.
And in such a fashion, but...
Yeah, well, probably best not to talk about the
thank
you.
Robbie Fowler, the Pele of the Indian NASL. There we are. I'm not sure we're going to get time to talk about governance and stuff, but a quick word on...
Well, we can extend it. It's the final one. Let's extend it by a few minutes.
Stretch it open. They've got nowhere to go. They can put it on pause. Come on. everyone's taking life a lot slower in 2017. You know, everything's automated. And everything's so easy.
Yeah, absolutely. We're all people of leisure. And of course, there was that horrific temporal rift that wiped out half the population. So, everything is literally slower now because time is,
And they're using their 6G phones anyway. So,
6G, come on. Think bigger. 12G. 12G in Korea, anyway. Not in London. They're on 3.5G in London still.
Yeah, that much wanted fourth.
Never happened.
4G launch.
Don't talk about it.
But, but things are looking up for the England national team now that Seb Coe is the Prime Minister.
Not Boris.
Not enough.
Oh, maybe.
Come back, listeners. Come back.
The future is much more. Say, look, people listening in 2017. These were our genuine fears.
Yeah.
Genuine fears.
And if you are listening in 2012, stay there. Don't leave. It's not safe. The future's not safe.
But of course, the big question is where the sound of football is going to be in 2017.
Oh man.
In New Zealand, possibly. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have all moved to New Zealand.
Chris will have dragged us all out there. We'll all be sheep farmers out there.
Yeah,
we'll
it'll be the
sound of shearing.
I was just thinking, like, maybe, like, you know, I just wait long enough until you two kind of get bored of doing it, and then I'll just kind of relight the flame over there and bring it back as a personal vehicle.
Chris Oakley's real sound of football.
Splinter. Yeah. The Bucks Fizz style split.
Exactly that.
Yes, come on! Let's do it. Chris Oakley's sound of football. Yeah. And then there'll be the real sound of football. Yes. Yes, I like it. Or maybe a tribute podcasts like Bjorn Again or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, tributes, you know, like Bjorn Again and FC United of Manchester. Sorry. Yeah. That would be cool as well. So we could have all the other people, people doing tribute sound of, say, the sound of football or something like that.
Sound of football. Yes. A quick word, if I can just break off from that little foray. Non-league football in 5 years' time, is it likely to have gained an even greater audience? Because there's been the trend, of course, over the last few years. People are embracing it more and more. But, I mean, you know, would you think people are likely to walk away from top-flight football across the globe in their droves and sort of turn towards more localised football? Is that likely?
I don't think so. I think it's very easy for people to think, yeah, you know, football's pricing out the general fan.
And, well, it is.
And, and with... what am I trying to say? It's not the fact that people don't have enough money to go to football, so they'll go and watch non-league football. What there is they'll find something else to do rather than go to a football match.
Yeah,
which is a sad thing, but it's what will actually happen.
Well, some will get will just upgrade their holo TVs and get Sky or Star or Galaxy or whatever it is. Channel 5, whatever it is. And do that or basically do what they're doing now. Non-league football will always be in permanent crisis. It will always be followed by a rump of people who want to keep it real. And that rump of people will probably never ever change in shape or size. Clubs will come and clubs will go, and there will always be murmurings and discontent and concern about the future of non-league football. And that is what non-league football is, and it's wonderful that it is like that, and it's
and
not going to change.
There will be a few clubs that will rise out of nowhere with some very, very shady backers, and they'll even get up into the league and everyone will hate them.
I think, indeed, I think one thing is certain, that we don't need to say where we think Fleetwood Town will be in 5 years' time. I think we'll leave that
open-ended.
We all know.
What, you mean Joey Barton's Fleetwood Town?
And that really ill-conceived project that they did with Fleetwood Mac. That was not good. That was not good. I think just a well, apparently one in three people on this planet did. That doesn't mean it was a good idea. it was like the final trilogy of Star Wars by Lucas. I mean, everyone said, "Don't do it, George," but he went ahead and did it anyway.
Of course he did. He couldn't help it.
And it reeked.
Star Wars Episode 9 was the best one.
It was awful. I'm bringing in William Shatner at the end. I mean, that was just so tedious.
Oh, no, come on. Everything made sense then.
And the
you
end
could
is...
see where he was going with the Phantom Menace. I mean, suddenly everything was clear. Yeah, the scales fell from my eyes, anyway.
You're on your own there. Yeah, well, that's the procedure to have your eyes corrected, remember?
Yes. Damn that laser surgery. God,
maybe we should return to the topic of football.
Yes.
Or maybe we should finish, I don't know. I mean, there is a broader point to be made about the concerns about, you know, the Premier League and, you know, the greed and the avarice and the corporateness and the high ticket prices.
Yes.
But you can't help but feel that these are things... Chris, remember those international football yearbooks
discussed a long time ago.
These issues were around back then.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think that they're going to be around in 5 years' time and they're going to be around in 20 years' time. I think that there'll still be an appetite for the game. Inevitably, there'll be different ways of enjoying it. And it may well be that the relationship between, you know, the paying supporters and the club changes. And maybe more clubs will become supporter-owned and maybe less clubs will become supporter-owned. But I still think that people will still turn up and watch football, even if they have to pay through the nose of it. Mm-hmm. One thing is certain, I don't think people are going to become less stupid over the next 5 years.
Oh, God, no.
So they'll still be willing to pay.
Yeah, good. And that means that there almost certainly will be an episode 400 of The Sound of Football.
Indeed.
Sound of
Football.
Here to serve. Yes.
Are you saying that our listeners are stupid? Apart from the fact that they've sat through 35
minutes. Of course I'm not.
Probably that they've sat through 32 minutes, 34 minutes of this.
No, the real stupid ones are the ones who actually waited until 2017 to listen to this.
You know who you are.
Yes.
I mean, you know, well done, but Jesus. I just want to say, by the way, if you're listening in from America and this is your first podcast that you've downloaded, welcome aboard. Yeah, it's not always like this. We do actually kind of talk about current football.
Thanks for stopping by, and sorry we won't see you again.
Anyway, that's probably a good point at which to sign off from that discussion. But if you've got your own thoughts, of course, about the way you think football will be going and where it will be in 5 years' time, drop us a line, won't you?
If you know what... Definitely drop us a line.
Yes.
Definitely drop us a line, all right?
Yeah.
Because we'd like to know too. And so I mean, would my bookie.
If you want to tell us about the big hoo-ha that happened when they basically reduced English football to a five-a-side sport, because basically clubs couldn't afford to buy any players, you know, that's we need to know about that now. Can you just pop in the time machine and just get back and tell us? Yeah. Anyway, yeah,
but don't step on any butterflies, okay? Otherwise, everything will just go completely wrong again.
Watch out for the Velociraptors, because you may have forgotten, but they existed in 2012.
There weren't many of them, but they were around. Drop us a line, sofpodcast.com. Leave us a comment on one of our blog posts or on Twitter at Sound of Football, or go to our Facebook fan page, which I'm pleased to see that many of you have done. Facebook.com/Sound of Football. Our thanks to Jamie Gore Kroger last week. I hope I've pronounced your surname correctly there. Last week said, enjoyed hearing your take on the Rangers saga, and basically it was very complimentary, saying that bloggers and podcasters have really put the mainstream media, particularly the West of Scotland print media, to shame in their excellent coverage of this issue. So thank you very much for
yes, that's very kind of you.
Saying such nice things. We're doing our best here, damn it. Yes, thank you very much. And a mention to Andre Doublesin, our mainstay friend on Facebook, who regularly leaves us comments. We've still not given him a name check, damn it, but thank you, Andre, for always being there, and may many of you also do so in the future. Anyway, that's it. But just to say, actually, before we go, a last very late shout for the Socrates event coming up this Friday. As we're recording this, you'll have to be pretty quick from downloading the podcast straight away from publication to letting us know that you'd like to come along. But, you know, we are going to...
Chris, you're telling them to go to an event that happened 5 years ago.
Well,
it's too late.
Stay in character. Come on.
Sorry. Have I passed the audition?
I think on that note.
Yeah. Yes. So anyway, yes. Socrates coming up this Friday, 31st of August, 2012. Sports Bar and Grill, Victoria Station. Go along to the Socrates website. And if you want to come along, be quick, but let us know if you can. Lots and lots of people are going to be there, so it should be a wonderful night as ever. What else have I got here? I'm just looking. I think that's pretty much everything done. So thanks, everyone, for listening. You haven't quite got rid of me yet, because, as I say, we are going to be recording a podcast on Friday night on the occasion of that Socrates event. So one more pubcast to come involving me. After that, hopefully I'll be cropping up from time to time once I'm over in New Zealand. So I don't know, be involved in the podcast in some capacity. But I think now is the time to do the decent thing and stand down for a better man. More of which in due course. Anyway.
Roger Moore. I didn't know Roger Moore was placing. Wow. Well,
well, now you know.
Fancy that.
So anyway, lads, been absolutely wonderful. Let's do this again on Friday. But it's been an absolute blast. Fantastic time I've had recording this podcast and the other 121 before it. So thanks for being there. And let's hope our paths cross again in the not too distant future. And thanks to everybody who's listening in, who's been such a great support as well since we started 3 years ago. It's been an absolute blast. Anyway, on that note, thanks very much, everyone. And as usual, from the three of us, but particularly from me, it's a fond farewell. Goodbye.